Hey there, Perf Bites listeners. Before you listen to the show today, please take a moment to listen to this word from our sponsor.
Want better answers? Use better data. After years of struggling with old tools and practices, today's performance practitioners need the ability to optimize modern applications. They need the flexibility to use tools wherever they best fit, with seamless integration that makes every engineer more effective and valuable. That's where SOSTA comes in. SOSTA's low-testing flagship product, CloudTest, delivers actionable intelligence that lets your performance team drill into live data to pinpoint any performance issues. Leading brands like Nordstrom, Best Buy, DirecTV, SAP, and MSN have all turned to SOSTA to simulate more realistic traffic for load and performance testing for web and mobile apps at any scale, anytime, from the cloud. Use predictive analytics to determine whether optimizing your site will provide enough ROI to justify any suggested changes. CloudTest gives you complete load testing flexibility, from development to production. And let's talk about SOSTA's Mpulse. It is the leading real user monitoring technology for better insight into your real users. Mpulse allows you to accurately monitor your customer experience and take control of your business results. See how performance affects user behavior in real time so you can optimize in real time. The analytics capabilities found inside Mpulse will astound even the most senior operations engineer and also leave your executives drooling. Mpulse delivers the rich visualizations and real user data essential to their decisions about global application performance. SOSTA's CloudTest and Mpulse can instantly transform your application performance practices into a world-class operation. Learn more at www.sosta.com.
Time for Perf Bites.
What the f*** is Perf Bites? The fourth square meal of the day. Don't bogart Perf Bites. Waffles. Microwave ready. Add nutritional value to your brain.
It's time for Perf Bites with your hosts Mark Tomlinson, James Pulley, and Howard Chorney.
Perf Bites.
Whatever.
Hey! It's time for Perf Bites once again, my friends. Hello, Perf Biters. Today we're going to have... We're going to be responding to some really, really cool inquiries from several different people on a subject that is near and dear to our hearts, even though it seems to escape the minds of most people that end up on the news of the damn. James, what are we talking about?
We're talking about the CDN.
CDN. C period, D period, N period. Or Howard, as the Sarge might say.
The CDN.
So, James, one of your customers has actually had quite a robust conversation with you saying, what is this CDN thing, right?
Well, not quite a customer. You see, Mark, I tend to take advantage of my local Panera Bread since they're very close, a lot of mornings for breakfast.
Yes.
And I was in one morning and, you know, people were asking, hey, what do you do? You're in here almost every morning for breakfast. You know, how can you afford this luxury Panera thing, which I didn't consider a luxury, but you know, it is South Carolina, North Carolina.
So. Yes.
What did you have? Eggs Benedict on a bagel or something with caviar at Panera, which made it so luxurious?
No. Actually, my favorite thing at Panera, they've canceled. So, but that's a completely separate story. So the next day, I'm getting my next favorite thing, which they did not cancel, and the chef is saying, what is this CDN thing that you talk about?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we need to define what is the CDN.
And one of our contributors, Joshua Rector, who actually gave us a perf rant just a few episodes ago, he actually posted a question on the Facebook page, which anyone can actually post us a question at ask@perfbytes.com or on the Facebook page, asking, would love to hear your take on how you can emulate a CDN in a perf testing environment. Sort of answer the question, Joshua says, how do I avoid artificially stressing origin servers with pages normally served by CDN while at the same time achieving appropriate stress on the dynamic pages always served by the origin?
Yeah.
Which I think is a very good question.
It's a very good question, and it's a very particular challenge. Let's talk about this thing called the CDN.
Yes.
And what does it stand for? It stands for the Content Distribution Network. This is not the Canadian Distillers Network. This is the Content Delivery Network.
So if you're tuning in waiting for the distillers network, you should go away.
Well, I don't know. There seems to be a high correlation between alcohol and performance testers. I don't know what that really means. profession driving people to drink. I don't know. But this is definitely about content distribution versus distillation.
So. Or a crafty door network.
True.
Carrot diagram nation.
There's probably some acronym involving crepes as well.
Oh, that sounds good. Crepes would be good.
I was thinking compact disc something.
But it's none of those items.
It's none of them.
It's all about taking the network, making it shorter, and giving you the fastest possible location for your content.
Now, this is interesting because it is a content distribution network, which makes you think more about distributing from your system outward to nodes elsewhere on the network. Whereas I've also heard it called a content delivery network. I think Akamai's polished language has the delivery network.
Do you want the exact definition of a CDN?
Is it delivery or distribution?
A CDN is short for content delivery network.
Ha-ha!
A content delivery network is a system of distributed servers that deliver web pages and other web content to a user based on the geographic location of the user, the origin of the web page, and content delivery server. So depending on where you're located, this is also known as an edge server, right?
Yeah.
The server is effectively... So let's see what else. It goes on to say the service is effective in speeding the delivery of content of websites with high traffic and websites that have a global reach.
Yes, but Howard, people don't tune into the podcast just to hear us read the Wikipedia page.
Oh, I know, but this is actually really a great meaning.
It is, and I like the fact that they call it a content delivery network, even though they use the word distributed.
So yes. Let's talk about really what the CDN addresses. So we've got CPU, disk, memory, and network. And if you read anything from, say, Steve Souder, Steve says that, 90%+ of performance is all about the client. I would be happy to debate him on that up until the point where the server starts to decline. But what we're doing in this case, he has some very good rules for what should be in the content delivery network.
Yes.
That is, we're going to reduce the network path in order to serve an item to you. And as a result, your client will be faster and your load will be reduced on your server.
Right. So the idea, James, for those that are complete newbies to this, is that some of the content from your website, if you have a client, let's say in the UK, in the United Kingdom, and your servers are at GoDaddy somewhere in Phoenix.
Yes.
And 100% of the hits, the traffic that are requested from the browser, from the app, whatever it is, have to go all the way from the UK to Phoenix and back. 100% of those calls without a CDN.
Yes.
If you put a CDN in place, the CDN provider, or even if you roll it your own, you would put a server closer to the UK, let's say in Ireland. So
yes.
you put a server. So let's say all of the JPEG, all the images, now they get moved from Phoenix to Ireland. So now let's say 50% of your traffic is JPEG images. It's a big marketing site or something.
Correct.
So the idea being 50% of your traffic only has to go to Ireland and back. The other 50% will still go to what we call origin. So maybe you can give a little history on sort of how we came up with these, where the origin and where the whole idea of doing this geographically distributed delivery network came from.
So we're going to need to roll it back to a couple of foundation elements, one commercial, one in academia. And the first one is we're going to bring up kind of a historic company called Novell.
Howard, did you run Novell servers in your...
I never, I played with some, but I never had to run Novell servers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was more of a Banyan guy, so,
I remember.
But Novell began a really accelerated decline under the Windows monopoly domination.
That's right.
And they were caught by a couple of items. One is they sold off their actual Unix assets to SCO.
That's right.
Two, they developed this internet caching technology called Novell Internet Caching, which is kind of the first commercial implementation of a web-based cache.
Yep.
Or a content delivery network as we know it today. And third, they acquired a Linux distribution.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see, I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's the one that's out of Germany.
SUSE.
It's SUSE.
Yeah.
So we've got this commercial foundation, and now we've got this academic foundation, which is or was the predecessor to Squid.
Yeah.
The open source product, which came out of MIT.
Yes, not the animal Squid.
What's that?
Not the animal Squid or a giant Squid. Has the Squid character ever shown up on sci-fi?
I believe there was a giant Squid show on sci-fi.
Was there a giant Squid? I think there's a movie called The Giant Squid. Probably Sam Neill is in it. Knowing Sam Neill.
Well, you got the giant squid in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
That's right. Giant squid.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have Squidward on SpongeBob SquarePants.
Well, you know, they could have called it Squid. They could have called it Architeuthis. But I think Squid is just a little bit
That's right.
More
Actually,
common.
Giant Squid is also a post-metal progressive rock band out of San Francisco.
I would have never known that.
With some of their songs, I'm Gonna Spray Ink All Over You.
They have an album called Monsters in the Creek, which doesn't make sense to me in terms of squid being freshwater. But
no,
they
no.
did have songs about the Jersey Shore attacks of 1916. There was an instrumental called Lester Stillwell, named after the 11-year-old boy killed during the attacks, Monster in the Creek. Was their album on that? It was very, very fascinating. So these are Squid Geeks.
And of course, don't forget fried calamari.
Exactly. Okay. So back
prefer
to
mine
squid.
Rhode Island style. You know, that's with the hot banana peppers in it.
Yeah. So we've got these couple of foundations. We've got Novell Internet Caching as a commercial service. We've got MIT, which is a think tank producing this open source tool called Squid, and then also spawning this commercial service called Akamai.
Akamai's been around quite a while. I mean, it's...
Well, they all came out of MIT.
Yeah.
They're all the ones that worked on Squid originally.
Yeah, and they're a big, big local Boston company in terms of technology. I mean, Akamai does lots of stuff.
Yes, they are. You know, they've really branched out, and hopefully we'll talk about that a little later. So the CDN just isn't – it's just not for serving out content anymore.
Yeah. They have some application acceleration in addition to web acceleration. So there's a lot of pieces and parts to this.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. So now a lot of people will know Akamai, and that's become – and even as a commercial service, even the last 10 years or more, Akamai has probably been the leader. But there's a bunch of other options of roll-your-own kind of stuff. You could do a Squid in Amazon. Or even Amazon has – most of the ISPs even have sort of simplistic CDN. Maybe not all the rules in the world, but they have simple stuff, right?
Right. So this is moving towards a more commoditization of this as a service. If you look at Amazon, if you look at Microsoft Cloud Azure, if you look at IBM's public cloud, all of them have available as a service some sort of caching solution for content delivery, where one, they will reproduce your content to different locations in the world where it's serviced from, and two, they also have a cache in front of it.
Right.
So we're rapidly moving towards... It's available anywhere you go, and if you don't take advantage of it, then you suck. And on the open source side, it's even more rich. You've got Squid, you've got Varnish, which is multi-threaded versus Squid single-threaded.
Right.
And then you have the preferred web server of the porn industry, which is Nginx.
Nginx is actually one of the highest throughput scalable architectures for a front-end web service presentation layer.
So can you imagine, given their preference to the porn industry, why they would want to cache stuff?
Yeah, actually, I have a customer who was using Nginx, and they have a huge site, and they have tons of traffic.
Yeah, like film.
Yeah, like video, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Exactly. But Nginx, unlike other sort of standard web servers, you can actually configure Nginx to actually be a CDN, to be a caching server almost exclusively. Yes.
And in fact, in a lot of architectures, you'll see that you've got an Nginx or Nginx server as a bridgehead in front of the rest of the application to catch all the stuff, which is common, to keep it off of your regular web server.
Yeah. And now caching, generally, I mean, I don't think we've actually done an episode about the caching concept, but conceptually, the idea is that you can think of the idea as rather than making a full transaction that takes multiple seconds to get data from a database, for instance, to get data halfway around the world, as we talked about the UK and Phoenix before. The idea of caching just generally is that, gosh, I really wish I didn't have to make that round trip all the way around, right?
Exactly.
So the idea of caching, and it could be local within the CPU, right? It could be inside a single computer or across massively distributed networks. You're leveraging this idea of caching. Let's just keep a copy of that data local here so it's faster to retrieve it, especially that static stuff that doesn't change that often. Which brings me to the next thing you list here, James, is Riverbed. Riverbed's just one of the, and I think of Cisco WAS as well, these caching devices that you can even distribute in your proprietary network.
Yeah, and this is important to recognize that this type of technology stack is available inside of your own company, because many people complain about, hey, my expense application is slow.
Sure.
My SAP application is slow to look at pay stubs and all these things.
Yeah, the HR portal. Yeah.
Yeah, Riverbed and other WAN acceleration appliances can actually cache a lot of that static information that's coming from these sites and make it available faster locally. And what separates these WAS-type devices from traditional caching appliances is they operate on both ends of a network. So you have a front end and you have another front end at location B. And what they do is they cache on not only a file basis, but within a file itself.
Yeah.
So you can get up to 64K chunks that instead of passing the full 64K, you will pass a signature between bridgehead A and bridgehead B,
right,
where it will just serve the content locally.
Yeah, they also do another thing that helps make the transmission so fast, too. They do a protocol conversion. So all your TCP calls,
mm-hmm, yep,
are done locally, and then they send the traffic between the two accelerators through UDP.
Oh, so you could have a change in static content from the bridgehead, from the origin side, and then over UDP broadcast it out to multiple client side or remote appliances. Much more efficient.
Yeah, because it's doing all the handshake again. Yeah, absolutely, it's doing all the handshaking internally, and then between the two, they
and people don't often think of CDNs internally to accelerate their applications, but it's very critical if you have something like a Riverbed or other, yep, WAN acceleration appliances, take advantage of them because they can really improve the overall throughput.
Yeah.
Well, just think if you're like a big box chain store or something like that, and you have all your web-based apps that all your employees are going to be using all the time.
Sure.
Right? If you go back to origin all the time with those apps and you have customers waiting for your slow computer systems.
Yeah.
Instead of losing customers on the web, you can lose them right in person.
Or heck, how about pay stubs on my SAP or the SAP web interface?
Sure.
There's so much of that stuff that can be cached except for the actual PDF, and most people don't do it.
And if you expect your employees to be productive, you got to make sure they can get to the apps internally to do, yep, that. Now, the other reason I think we bring up the CDN so often in the news of the damned is that the CDN applied properly, used properly, or maybe I'll say extensively, with some intelligence behind it to your app, is this idea that the closer a CDN is to the user geographically, the faster that content will be delivered to the user. And CDNs also provide this buffer to what we call the origin servers. So rather than taking point load hit back home in your own data center, let's say, again, 50, 60, 70% of that static traffic would take a hit in point load out in the geographies, out at the CDN. And so when we bring this up in the News of the Damned as a major crashing or a component that's behind the News of the Damned, it's because people are taking 100% of the point load hit at the origin server. And that is that can be tremendously overwhelming, especially if you're trying to buy tickets in the
UK. That'd be James clapping.
Who's clapping there?
Oh! I'm sorry. I got excited.
You got excited. You're applauding. Yeah, that's exactly right. So if you just even doing simple CDN, just turn on the switch, take the defaults for JPEGs and other maybe CSS or things like that for a point load situation. Just doing basic. Hey, the website's up. Turn on the CDN. Send that content out into the network of nodes that are around the world.
And corresponding to that, don't put dynamic content on your front page.
Sure.
So don't put dynamic content on your front page. B, cache all of your static file types.
So I think we're missing a whole other feature set of CDNs right now too. CDNs can provide a lot of security for you in your website.
Are you referring to the web application firewall capabilities?
Location flooding. So CDNs are really good for help preventing a DOS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because what happens when you set up configure your edge servers, you have, and by the way, for an edge server is actually the server sitting, is that CDN asset that's sitting out on the edge. So in the example Mark gave a little earlier, if you're in the UK and your edge server, your front server is in Ireland, you don't have to go back to origin, you go back to Ireland. Yeah. But let's say for the sake of this discussion that server, that server in Ireland all of a sudden was getting flooded with requests out of the UK, Ireland, so on and so forth. Yeah. What it would actually do is it can either A, block, or B, start throttling traffic.
Yeah, and denial of service is one of those security attacks that quickly becomes a performance problem just because of the whole nature of a DOS or a DDoS, especially, is overwhelming volumes of traffic. It's a volume performance or load type of issue. And so as a DDoS, if you're like, look, I don't want that actual traffic to come take out my actual data center. So in a funny way, let Akamai deal with it. Yeah, you guys have servers. Come on.
But it's really true. I mean, when we've done testing with Akamai before, we've actually learned the hard way once or twice about, well, just once. I never learn it twice. Yeah. But we learned the hard way once about the Akamai throttling.
Akamai throttling?
Yeah. And Howard, that gets into using them under test that we're gonna talk about in the next segment.
And so another kind of cool thing that a CDN will do is it provides faster DNS.
Wait a minute.
Well, DNS can be cached anyway. So you're saying that your DNS, because of how they work. Basically, you've got DNS changes that take place.
Yeah. So you can, like, one company boasts that it can actually improve its DNS up by 75%.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It makes sense only because the CDN, if you think of it as a generic node, a computer that's just out there in the world, it can actually talk on any protocol for any purpose. So if you wanted to have DNS servers, not just HTTP, if you wanted to have SMTP, if you're just basically Akamai, so like, we got a bunch of computers all around the world, man, and if you want to serve up DNS requests or DNS responses in Ireland to the UK, it's a lot faster to get a DNS response from Ireland than it is going all the way to Phoenix, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's another great advantage. Just getting to the conversation we had earlier about the freeware, some of the freeware pieces versus some of the, more established pay-for version. I'm not so sure you get all the security advantages when you're using the freeware.
Maybe not. Maybe not. I think that may be an elaboration that Akamai really brings to the table in terms of, you know, something more sophisticated. Guys, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about using CDNs within your test environment. Does that sound like a good idea?
Sounds like a good idea.
Absolutely.
Very good. We'll be right back.
LightSquare.com is proud to be a sponsor of Perf Bytes. LightSquare.com is a unique offering for performance tuning as a service for web architectures. LightSquare delivers tuning recommendations in under 72 hours without the typical investment in tools, license fees, or consultants, where we do the work up front. With LightSquare, you only pay based on the level of improvement. Find out more about LightSquare's unique pricing model at www.litesquare.com/pricing.
All right. So let's talk a little bit, James, about how we might use a CDN in test inside the lab, different than implementing it in ops, right?
Yeah. So Mark, I want to talk about why it is so important if you have a CDN that you reproduce it in your test environment. So how shall I put this?
How shall you put this?
The most polite way I can say this is that to hit the checkbox for not downloading static content and whatever tool you're using, and then just moving forward under the assumption that everything is perfect with your CDN settings and your origin server settings for cache management, is a very, very poor assumption and proves likely not to be true in production.
Let me clarify this just a little bit. Almost every load testing tool out there has this idea that it would there's a checkbox of some sort, and this was in LoadRunner, and I think it was if you check it, download embedded resources, which is like static content.
Or basically all the static stuff, JavaScript, style sheet, images, all that
stuff. Which is sort of scanning the returned HTML and looking for certain resource types or content types and then pulling them down, which is, in LoadRunner anyway, it was very different than the extra res calls, which would be more explicitly called out in the script. For a web virtual user anyway, where it would say, I absolutely need to download this XSD file or this CSS file. So these are explicitly called versus automatically scanned in a web submit form or one of the HTML context driven scripts. Absolutely, if you unselect that option, that has no actual bearing on the performance of your CDN whatsoever. So that's not going to solve the problem. That's not actually a valid test, just deselecting.
What I want to share with you is that I'm seeing so often is that 404s are flooding the zone on the origin servers. You're missing a map of Denmark that is in the footer of the page.
Yeah.
And your error log is growing exponentially as your site grows, and then basically your file system falls over, and so does your web server.
Yeah.
Because of all these 404s. Or there are 15 different types of fonts that you could cache, and you've covered 10 out of the 14 that you have on your server. So for every single page, you're coming back through the CDN to pull a particular font type, true type, .fon, .svg, whatever, off the server to serve on your web page. So you don't have the ability to catch these things if you don't have a CDN or CDN substitute that you can test your settings
with. So before we jump into the idea of how do I emulate, instead of this option, how do I emulate a full CDN in the lab, I think, Howard, you can tell us a little bit more specifically, again, about the fact that SOSTA has this relationship with Akamai after all these years, and how to actually spread the load of what the challenges are and how you guys have worked together with those guys to come up with a better solution.
So I just want to say we, not just Akamai guys, I mean, this is just good practices for testing with any CDN vendor, because there are several of them out there, right? So usually what I like to do before I run a test is get my CDN vendor involved and coordinate the testing with them. It's most important to communicate the locations of all your target load injectors, right? Why do we do that? Because remember we talked a little bit earlier in the show about how the CDN will actually do throttling and look for DOSs.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you have everything coming from one region or, you know, just two or three, whatever, three regions, and you're coming in with 60,000 users, you're going to get throttled. So it's going to make your test unrealistic. So that's why it's really important working with your CDN provider on something like that.
Yeah. So you would get somebody from Akamai or from the CDN provider. If you're doing coordinating a load test that's pretty large scale, you're going to be impacting their systems during the load test. So, you know.
Yeah, not only that, because you're going to be impacting their systems. But again, with the DOS stuff, you know, you'll have traffic flooding in from particular edge servers, and it's going to look like a DOS. Another thing, too, is it's really important to have your CDN provider on there, because just think of the load you're putting. This, you're putting on a real heavy load, one that may not have been really tested before, and you're actually helping the CDN provider do some tuning. So we've actually run some tests like that where we've tuned the caching in the CDN while we were running a performance test. Sure.
Now, there's two sides of the experience that I have on this. On one side, I see I'm coaching or working with people who are fairly disempowered. They might be an outsourced partner doing load testing, or they don't have a lot of communication skill, or they're not getting, you know, attention or priority or respect to, you know, hey guys, we need to coordinate with a CDN vendor X, Y, and Z. To those folks who are sort of either new to load testing or you're kind of low on the totem pole, just to be honest with you, you know, don't be bashful. Call up somebody. Usually the network administrator is a good person to start with. Someone in the ops department. Especially, Howard, if you're testing in production, of course you'll find someone in ops or tech ops to say, hey, guys, is there any way we can reach out to our CDN vendor and bring them in? Don't be afraid to request that. We need to work. I don't know who it is. It could be Akamai. It could be local. It could be Roll Your Own. But the idea is getting somebody who's on that team.
So, like, in any production performance test, there should be a moderator anyway. So, yeah. I mean, if you're that lower level, you need to find out who your moderator is, and you need to say, hey, we need to talk to the CDN provider. And usually that moderator works with the project coordinator, and be surprised, that will happen pretty fast.
The other experience I have, Howard, is the idea that when you do call up your CDN provider, and let's say it's just somebody doing load testing through the checkbox in GoDaddy or checkbox on 1&1, the idea is that you may call up the ISP, and they don't really have any CDN expertise. They do something rudimentary or something basic. They don't really have, you didn't pay for extreme services. Let's say you're really kind of the small and medium or, you know, not even a mid-size kind of company. You may be doing load testing in a world where there is no one to call. And, you know, gosh, we're going to blow over the ISP. I still would try to encourage somebody to reach out and say, don't we have someone from the support company? You know, 1&1, just support, just open a ticket. Hey, we're doing load testing. We're going to hit your stuff. Is there someone we can coordinate with?
Well, it's kind of interesting you say that too, because with some of the companies I've been doing larger production tests, yeah, we did have third-party vendors or ISPs out there, and, you know, we had to even work it with them. We had to fill out, you know, we had to write tickets to actually do that type of testing. So, Mark, you're absolutely right. You just can't go do that arbitrarily, because your ISP may get really annoyed with you.
Yeah. So if you do run into somebody that says, we're working with Akamai, usually you'll have some more savvy support response to say, oh, yes, we know what load testing is. We know what you're doing. That's approved, X, Y, and Z. If you're on a smaller ISP, especially, Howard, I think about some of these ticket sites where they're just kind of, oh, I just threw my site up over here on my little ISP and, you know, X, Y, and Z. Those guys, you may be the smartest guy in the room talking to them about performance, and that's why you're listening to this episode. But anyway, I just wanted to put out there that, like, it's possible that either you feel underpowered as an engineer, or your CDN provider or ISP is actually less prepared than even you are.
So there is a gateway question here, which kind of ties all these items together, which is the question of cost. CDNs aren't free. You pay for some number of requests. So this is big coordinating factor. I'm about to run a performance test. I at least need to work with the person who manages that account. So at the end of 2 weeks, they don't show up waving a huge invoice at the project manager and stating, you're going to have to pay for this.
Yeah. Have you seen that, Howard?
Why, I have, Mark.
Especially testing in production. You must run into somebody who forgot to call.
Well, that's why it's important to let everyone know in advance that this is not going to be a freebie. But I will say this, since I do work more with enterprise sites.
Sure.
Everyone around knows that you pay for the CDN. So when we make a decision to run a test like this, everyone's pretty... No one's surprised with the CDN bill, but to James's point, it's not free to go through a CDN, so you are going to pay for it.
And sometimes, in this case, statistical sampling will help you. You can go for 5 or 10% of your population and still be able to identify misconfiguration issues that impact performance, but you don't have to take the 100% full load in the CDN and take the cost for that.
Depending on what type of testing you want to do and what your goal in your, of your test are, I agree with that.
Sure. Now, if you're not testing in production, let's say you were in the lab, and I think this gets to Josh's point, which is how do I bring that into my test design if I'm actually pre-prod in a lab?
Well, there's two pieces of that. There's the virtual lab, that is, I'm on VMware or I'm in a cloud situation, and then there's the physical lab inside of my infrastructure. What's becoming more popular is, okay, I have load generators out in Amazon, Microsoft, IBM, Rackspace. You can actually integrate a local CDN-like solution using open source tools, using Nginx, using Varnish, using Squid at each of your load generator locations and having them actually be the web proxy.
Oh, yeah.
To me, there's a couple of really other important notes if you're going to be testing through a CDN. And I mean, whether it's in your lab or whether you're testing your site through your CDN vendor. One, to me, the big thing to remember is, when you design your test, don't design it to test the CDN. Your goal is to go back to origin here, right? Because you're going to cache all your content up front.
Correct.
I guarantee you that your CDN vendor has load tested the heck out of their solution before they put it on the market. And I know this to be true, right? So the problem we run into are people start to write these scripts and they're sending all this traffic on their CDN and nothing's going back to origin. So they're not getting realistic tests.
And you know what? There's an easy way to address that. For 5% of the time to account for new uncached CDNs coming online from different areas around the world, for that uncached content, basically you can run a random number generator and 5% of the time, you can actually add a parameter to the end of your JPEG or a parameter to your end of your style sheet when you make the call, and that effectively defeats the CDN and forces it all the way back to origin. But that's a test design issue that you've got to take into account right up front.
Yeah, it's a lovely little scripting trick to say, all right, let's say I'm in the lab and I've set up Squid or Varnish, and I've got the ability to offload from the main app server a side server here that's running Squid, and it's got 4 gig of RAM, and it's going to pick up all my JPEGs and static content and such and such. What you might do is actually start looking at kind of the traffic patterns, maybe in prod.
Look at the hit ratio in cache.
Or even analyze the actual traffic, James, to say, where did I get this particular image from? Did I get this image? Where did the actual call? Oh, look, that call came from Akamai, blah, 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 CDN, blah, 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 dot something dot com. And it's like, that's not my origin server in prod, but you have to know what are the origin servers in prod? So you're going to have to be a little bit more aware of how the CDN is configured in prod to go back and say, all right, in my test lab, internally, let's configure this so that those queries, which when I recorded my script in the lab, everything went to origin. But what I'm going to do is replace the URL, the host name, and actually redirect that stuff over to my little squid server over here in the corner.
You could certainly do that directly, or you can use it in what's called proxy mode, where everything goes through the squid server as it would go through the CDN, actually acting as a tunnel in production. And for those items where you want to defeat it, you can go back to the parameter on the end of the JPEG type model to match up to your hit ratio.
Yeah, exactly. So you only in the script you would actually just tag a little thing extra so that it flies through the proxy and hits the origin, whereas otherwise it would go through the squid proxy and actually pick up the piece from CDN, a simulated CDN, let's call it. Yeah.
Exactly. So in this discussion we've kind of hit both the in cloud and in house type of solution, that is the things that you need to look at, that is how do you configure it? What individuals you need to have involved to certify that it matches up, how you need to look at production to get information about how it's actually structured in production for how much is going to hit your origin servers on a natural basis and to reproduce it. And so it's not an insignificant effort, but it does yield enormous benefits because you can catch stuff that you would not normally catch by simply unchecking the text box to download static resources.
Yeah, I can't stress enough, and I think to Howard's point, if you are testing in the lab prior to release to production, understanding or even synchronizing some rules with Akamai or with the external CDN and bringing them into the lab will be really important, because that is where the real app is going to be deployed. Which is to say certain content types are going to be cached or not. And so if you're just sort of setting up Squid in a vacuum, don't do that. I mean, try to reach out to your ops guys and say, what are the standard rules you guys have set up?
But if you're respecting production, then it goes back to what the developers are doing and how the web server's configured.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I agree with that. I'm just saying if you want to catch some kind of bugs pre-release before something hits you've got to get your lab to match what the production landscape
exactly.
looks like.
You know, I just want to bring up one more little point too. When you're after you're testing in production with your CDN, make sure they turn the throttling back on when you're done.
Absolutely.
Oh, if you are testing with the cool kids in production like Howard, and you make some accommodation, and that could be other kinds of rules that Howard, I think, were defects as well. You might say, hey, gosh, guys, we turned this on for the test. Here's the list of not just the things we did in the configuration, the base configuration for Akamai, but here's other content types and particular components that we're deciding should even not be cached. You might
exactly.
say, you know what, here's the short list of what's going to be cached. What for each release, when you run, we might come up with here these three things. Here's the new and somebody will forget, Howard. You know they will. They'll be like, oh, you know, we didn't log them as bugs, or they didn't go in a ticket, or did I close that ticket? People forget stuff like that, you know.
Sometimes it's convenient for memory loss, too.
Yeah, that's what Jira is for. Just put it in a Jira ticket and then forget about it. All right, guys, we'll take a short break for a public service announcement, and then we'll come right back and talk about things that people aren't doing about their CDN. That probably lands them on the news of the damned. You know what I'm saying?
We hear you, Brother Mark.
You do know what I'm saying?
Greetings, Perf Bites listeners. Mark, James, and Howard would like to introduce you to our good friend, Master Sergeant Performance. Listen up, Perf Biters. Master Sergeant Performance here. Just in case you forgot, we're on the front lines of the battle for better performance. And I want you to pick up your feet and get marching on, soldiers. I'm tired of hearing that you're tired of never having enough time to test. And I'm tired of hearing that you're fed up with always being on the tail end of the S DLC. What's the problem? Did a jackalope just take a giant dump on your performance test plan? Tough luck, Bunky. No more wah-wah-wah. No more. We don't have time for this. Or I don't have time for that. Stop being a mamby-pamby. Time to suck it up and become a real live performance engineer. You are the commander of your testing destiny. So take charge and start leading. Ever hear of CIU Softy? That's right, Bunky C. Frickin' I, continuous integration. Take the lead. Work with your development partners. Spend some time on writing a real SOA suite. Kick it off from Jenkins and attack your code at the services level. And another thing, get to work with your partners in dev company on some real code review tools that will actually find issues before you test. In the performance army, we call that static analysis. Know it, live it, make it your new best friend. Show them you're just not another old run-of-the-mill performance tester. Show them you can add value way upstream in the SDLC. Heck, maybe you'll even get invited to some of those awesome parties you always get excluded from. You know, the officers make a mean cocktail at all of those requirements review meetings. So if you expect to storm the beaches and release land and kick some bottleneck butt with your new buddies in dev company, then get cracking on the basic trainings from the Perf Bites crew. And they might be able to help you get your caissons a-marching along. And remember, we at Perf Bites don't want to see you wind up in the stockade. You're all worthless and weak. Now drop and give me 20. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Howard, it's a beautiful thing you've created there, my friend.
Why, thank you, Mark.
Yes, Sergeant. Well, we need to give a shout out to Pete DeHaunt, performance tester, performance engineer. He lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and Pete is a former member of both the Marine Corps and Army bands in Washington, D.C., spent all over the world playing for multiple presidents, dignitaries, and now he tests websites.
Now he tests websites, but if Pete will accept our apologies for stealing the actual sergeant's call and the bugle calls and the actual drumming behind the scene, the official drumming stuff is probably, hopefully it was accurate, but you know, it's all in good fun. But the Sarge will be giving him a call, I'm sure, if he's not keeping in step with this kind of stuff. So in the last section on CDNs, Howard, what the heck does a CDN stand for again? I forgot.
It's a content delivery network, Mark.
Yeah, keratinous acuteness, cutinal directal
No, go.
Okay,
go.
Sorry, I don't know what that. I thought it was a medical term. It's sort of a device. And when you get older in life, you might have one of those procedures. It's fine. Let's talk a little bit about
cellulose diagnosis nitrogen.
That's perfect. Exactly right. It's something to do with Botox. So the last thing when talking about a CDN, we talked a little bit about, of course, what a CDN is. We talked a little bit about how to bring a CDN into your lab, and or if you're testing in production, how to do a little bit of coordination on that. But the last thing we should do is, I mean, it wouldn't be good for us to leave this topic unless we didn't specifically cover things that would help people avoid being on the news of the damned, even the simple stuff. And I'll give some applause out to both you, Howard and James, for kind of coming up with this list. And I think it's marvelous. So, sure. Howard, do you want to start off with the first one here?
Custom 404 handler, which is cache-able by the CDN. This is what the Onion did to drop load on their servers by...
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds. I can't even read it. My eyes are so small.
Two-thirds? Maybe up to... Yeah, 70, up to 70-some percent almost. So this is rather than taking a standard 404, every web server, you can actually configure the CDN to handle your 404s on stuff that you know isn't there.
And there's two pieces for this. One is you need to configure your origin servers to give up a custom 404 handler with a custom header when the header says it's cacheable for a period of time. And then you need to have that respected by your CDN.
Right. So either configure it yourself within a DIY CDN or call up Akamai and say, oh, by the way, this is a content type that you can put out. But the funny thing here is you have to know what is not going to be found versus most people run into 404s because they screwed something up and they're like, I don't know, it should be there. It's not there. It's a bug. So if the people aren't testing, most 404s show up in the world because people just aren't testing.
Well, what complicates this is there are two things. One, what the Onion was experiencing was directly related to bots, basically cruising the site.
Yeah.
And two, with style sheets, if an item is not present, let's say it's a graphical object, that means it may not get styled. There's still a 404 under the covers, but it just may not show up as an error to the user at all.
That's right. That's right. You may not display that piece just because of the way the style sheet is configured correctly. But the CDN can actually cache those 404s off of the root because you're actually saying, all right, from a style sheet perspective, cascade /X/X, and you know what? Anything under here, make it a cacheable 404.
Hey, static content.
Static content. Exactly right. Cool. Now, talking about redirects, this is an interesting thing where a lot of load testers might not understand the routing of the requests that they send into the topology, not only in the lab, but obviously in production. When it comes to 301s, 301s being permanent redirects, what's the tip here, James?
So let's think about a redirect. That is, I go to the website, and the website says, hey, I want you to go over here to pick up the file. So we have multiple round trips. I go to the origin server, I come back, I'm at a client, I process it, then I go someplace else. Well, what can happen with a properly configured CDN is it can automatically resolve those 301s, those permanent redirects for you. So on that first request, you go and then it basically seeds the cache. So the next time that request is made, instead of having this multiple round trip situation, you go directly to the cache and it serves up the what would have been the redirected file.
Yeah. And now the big win here is when that 301, or in some cases the 302, may be sending you sort of erroneously back to origin, which is where somebody misconfigures a CDN and suddenly that traffic siphons through and goes, whoop, I'm back at your origin server. So the nice thing about a 301 is you can say, I know this content is over here, X, and boom, the CDN picks that up and does that for you. How does this differ for a 302, the temporary redirect?
So for the temporary redirect, you have to come back to the origin server every single time in order to validate that the content hasn't moved. We see this a lot in dynamic applications, particularly shopping carts, things of that nature, where you have a cart ID. And you can sometimes configure your CDN to cache that on an individual session basis or an individual IP basis, because it's valid for one user, but it's not valid for other users.
Yeah.
Hey, can we go back to the 301 for a minute, please?
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, I think something really important that people need to understand too, and this is, of course, comes down to always understanding your architecture, but there are actually some publishing software out there now that, you know, are designed for marketing people to put content up on your web. And guess what? How those are handled?
And in most cases, I have to say, they're incorrectly marked as 302s temporary redirects, and they should be 301s permanent redirects.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And the point is, they're there on your site. So when you're testing, when you're thinking about it and thinking about what they're going to do and how you need to test, you have to understand that you could actually be going out to a third party, not just right to origin.
Yeah, don't ignore what gets recorded. Either in Charles Proxy or by your load testing tool at that transport level, if you see something that's being redirected, bing, bing, before you see the content load, pay attention to what's happening under the covers here, because even though the end users of the functional testers might be saying, that works great, it's just what we want, and that's what they sound like. I don't know if you've ever heard functional testers or end users. They sound, like that. The truth is, your job also as a performance tester is to understand what's happening under the covers and work with your ops guys or your network routing guys to say, this should be a 301. I think there's no excuse to say, I just sit here and fold my thumbs and say, well, okay, 302, that's what the app wants, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, if you know you're working with a CDN and you see 302s, you might raise a little flag that says, let's double check these 302s and make sure that we're doing it right.
And this Mark, is where you go grab your copy, your dog-eared copy of Steve Souter's high-performance websites.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not going to listen to you. But if you show up and you're waving this, well, one, after security talks to you, they'll actually take a look at the book that you have. It's like, oh, Steve Souders, we love him.
Yeah.
And then you'll have instant credibility.
Yeah.
Or you could always just call on the Sarge, and the Sarge could help you help explain it to it too.
But like anything, it's knowing what to look for. And we can always see in a lot of the raw traces with any load testing tool, hey, this got 301 and the load testing tool picks up the redirect and keeps recording. You can see that in the recording log and say, whoa, wow, what is this? Now, Howard, let's talk a little bit, obviously from the performance standpoint. Another thing people are not doing is obviously not involving the CDN in the test at all. Either they're not testing with it in the lab, or they're not synchronizing and understanding what the heck's happening in the real world with Akamai or with whatever's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how often have you heard we turn off download static resources because that's handled by Akamai? Well, you need to do that in the lab, right? So not involving the CDN or recreating a CDN and test, again, is totally miscuing your results. And as we talked about earlier, you know, you could be catching CDN configuration issues and things like that. So it's pretty foolish not to do that. Another quick thing too is if you're testing through a CDN, is make sure your warm and cache is up before you test. Otherwise you could skew your results too. So there's pluses and minuses.
Now that's a big thing for caching internally within the systems under test, which is just even like database warm up. Right? It's like, oh, this is the first lazy loading. If you have any lazy class loading within your .NET or Java application servers, you know, run for 5 minutes a medium load or something. Just get things kind of warmed up and then stop the test, wait for a couple of minutes, and then actually re-ramp up in that warm-up stuff. That's always a good idea.
Same principle. Yeah. And, you know, another thing, too, is you know, if you an argument being, well, I'm already testing in production, it's all there. Well, you know, when you cache content in a CDN, guess what? It's got a life expectancy. It clears, the cache will clear automatically after X, depending on your site.
Yeah, components get stale. I think the other idea here from involving the CDN in test, keep in mind, outside of your load testing tool, which either is binary, you know, enable, disable the static content, there is so much more to the configuration of a globally distributed content delivery network. The CDN is so much more sophisticated that the logic you need to come up with on this static content actually, you know, kind of takes that next level of complexity in your load test design.
And let's think about this in terms of scale. Fonts almost never change. You could cache them for essentially forever. Images are usually static and get replaced with other images, so you can cache them for probably months at a time.
Yep.
In your CDN. And then you get down to things which are more dynamic, like JavaScript and style sheets. You can still cache them for a period, usually from one build to the next.
Yeah, and in the middle of your test, what you might want to come up with is a scenario, like a one-hour load test, where in the middle of the load test, you actually push out a new version of the CSS. And then in your load test lab, you could actually do a JavaScript or a release push in the middle of the load test where it takes the first hit from origin and then starts pushing it over to Squid. And you'll see the load move from origin over to Squid and see that that's working properly. And then you turn around and say, guys, this will work. So you could even do this in the production side as well. So actually start testing pushes.
I love that idea, Mark. That's a great little tip.
If you set your timeout from time of request plus 20 minutes, all the way throughout your test, you'll get different updates coming from the CDN back to refresh its own cache.
Yeah. So running even a 1 hour baseline load test with a push in the middle of it is always a good idea. Now, if you're not caching internally at all, meaning you're not doing anything.
So Mark, Howard, we all have worked for organizations that have internal web applications that nobody likes to use. They're slow. It's like, oh my God, I've got to go use that again. You put it off, and finally you take the pain to go use it. And why is this happening? Because we're not taking advantage of the caching technologies we have internally, things like Riverbed, or even, my God, putting some of these open source solutions as proxies or bridgeheads at various sites to cache all the internal websites, to get all the static components on a 24-hour basis, refresh, or dump the cache at midnight every day. And then the first person that comes through seeds the cache. Everyone else that comes through, it's really fast.
Yeah. Howard, how many gigs have you been on, or I've been on even many fewer, with the old Shunra work to say, you know what, guys, that every branch office or remote office that's happening, everyone says, oh, the site is slow. And the first knee-jerk reaction is, we need to buy more pipe. We need to buy bigger pipes and faster pipes and network and spend the money. It's the network guy's fault. And we've come in either from Shunra or from load testing or even a single user kind of load test and said, you know what, you really just need some kind of caching solution because half this stuff only gets requests once, and the browser cache. Why do your support guys keep telling you to clear the browser cache to make the app work? So here's this weird anomaly that happens on a remote branch where it's like, okay, I've got Riverbed installed, but I still have to clear the cache because there's so many bugs within the app. Boy, this is where quality and infrastructure and all kind of... Why do we start putting dev and QA and ops all together into one team?
Yeah, no kidding. It's kind of funny that you mentioned that, Mark, because last week or 2 weeks ago when I was in Los Angeles, I actually had dinner with a past client of ours from Shunra. And I know myself and my good friend John, we went out and we did an evaluation of their network because people are complaining that the download times are way too slow. And after we completed that gig, we saw they were using 3% of their pipe. And they just had other things misconfigured. And I'm going to respect my customer's privacy and not go down the road on what was misconfigured. But
of course,
I will say this. The network guys thought we were the best money they ever spent.
Yeah, not to toot the horn. But, I mean, these are things that are well-known ways of working internally with internal apps. And I think, James, your point is also, it's even if it's, let's say, SharePoint or if it's, you know, stuff that most people are hands-off about, I mean, what do we do about these other types of applications that come from homegrown kind of sources?
Sure. We've got homegrown, or heck, we've got stuff like Salesforce, SAP. On the open source side, you got Sugar CRM.
Yep.
Essentially, anything that's based around a web standards technology. You mentioned SharePoint, Mark.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of components which are static within that model that can be cached to remove load off those origin servers, which actually makes them respond better, and also to move that load for those static components closer to the person actually making the request so that they get a better user experience. And so it's a win-win. You got to do a little bit of technology deploy. And you need to set your masks appropriately so you're only caching stuff that's internally and not allowing people to cache, going to Amazon.com or Yahoo or wherever externally. But you can get enormous improvements without ever touching the source code of the application or even the web server.
You know, James, in the episode on bots, remember the bots episode, you used this phrase that I liked, which is called parasitic load. And parasitic traffic. And the idea, much with the CDN, is even though it's not parasitic in the way that it's sort of foreign traffic. This is intentional, known traffic, right, that you want to do. You're just managing it differently. It's still, you could think of it in that paradigm where, you know what, this is by relieving your origin site, the core site of this static content or of this other type of content, that seems like a parasite to weigh down or pull down or consume resources from the main site, from the origin site. And so you can sort of think of a CDN as a way to alleviate this parasitic resource consumption. And all, even though I wouldn't negatively call it parasitic, right? I mean, so this is intentional, healthy traffic. This is a good source of traffic. You're just sharing.
Remember
it.
The white hat bots and the black hat bots.
Good bots and bad bots, right, Howard?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but you know, Mark, you bring up a good point because the commercial CDN solutions, not really the open source ones, but the commercial ones always include a web application firewall. So there are actually rules that you can deploy at the CDN to evaluate traffic there to block off completely what's coming to the origin servers. I mean, we talked about some sort of genetic characteristics of some of these bots. For instance, they don't implement a compression header. You could check actually at the CDN if there's no compression header, then you don't let them through at all.
Yeah, absolutely. There are definitely some great things you can do there.
So guys, we've kind of wrapped things up in the CDN world. Any last thoughts, Howard?
If you have one, you need to test with one, else your tests aren't valid. That's my biggest, Pete. That's the biggest thing I can say.
I'm with you. Do more than just sort of check the checkbox in your load tool on the static resources thing. Really research it, figure out what the production configuration looks like. James, what do you think?
I like. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm being distributed.
Actually, you're being redundantly cached. Well, Perf Bytes listeners, once again, you've powered down the servos on another episode of Perf Bytes. Hang on, let me clear the cache on that closing sentiment. I totally screwed that up. This is from last week. Actually, once again, you're now listening to The Origin Show. And as always, we'd like to thank you for listening to the show today.
Hey, as always, I'm going to say thank you to the lovely Mrs. Chorney for letting me have all the fun in doing this. And heck fire, I'm home for the next 6 weeks. How long will it take before you want me to hit the road? And of course, thanks to our listening audience. Without you, we are not here. Who else would listen to our rantings and ravings anyways? Thank you, thank you, thank you. And please, if you like the show, please tell your friends and or coworkers about the show and keep on listening.
Without you, we would not be here.
Or give us a review on iTunes.
Oh, that would be an awesome thing. Give us a review on iTunes.
James.
Mom, thank you for listening.
That's right. Thank you to James's mom, who's been listening for 3 years. God, Lord knows she's probably bored to death.
And confused on every show.
Probably. As always, I'll say a thanks to the sexy Irish voice of Perf Bytes. And also, a special thanks to our great sponsors, Sosta and Smart Bear, for their sponsorship and support of the Perf Bytes show. And you, this Perf Bytes community.
Everyone, today's show is powered by the sound of one hand clapping.
All the contents of this Perf Bytes episode is 100% copyrighted and protected by the monks of the Shaolin Monastery. Grasshopper, if you can snatch the pebble out of my hand, you can infringe on the copyright of this show titled The CDN in the Perf Bytes catalog.
For more information about Perf Bytes, visit the show's website at www.perfbytes.com or follow us on the Twitter, the Tumblr, the Facebook. And of course, you can always subscribe and listen to us on the Perf Bytes podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and thetestingpodcast.com. Just open your favorite listening app and search for Perf Bytes and click the subscribe button. You can also download the customized apps on iTunes or Google App Store, which is really awesome. And you might not know about this, but you can also send us an email at ask@perfbytes.com or even leave us a voicemail at 77-LOAD-PERF. That's 775-623-7373.
Listen up, Perf Bytes soldiers. Keep those cards, letters, emails, faxes, carrier pigeon messages, and smoke signal semaphores a-coming our way.
The Perf Bytes show and staff are supporters of the Practical Performance Analyst. The Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, Test Bash, and the Ministry of Testing, the Computer Measurement Group, the Workshop on Performance Reliability, and of course, the Software Test Professionals Community of Software Testers. Of course, we always hope to see you at the next STPCon conference. Join us there for a live Perf Bytes episode, great performance testing workshops and training, and of course, single malt scotch tastings. And of course, we have to give a shout out to Ian Molyneux, who is now joined us in the Perf Testing podcast business.
Thank you, guys. Listen to us on the next version of Perf Bytes. Ride 'em jackalope.
And ride 'em jackalope.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. Thanks, audience. Hasta la vista, baby.
I'll be back.
Grasshopper.